So reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 17, text 4. Okay, I just read the Sanskrit here. Jayante sattvika devam yaksharaksham sirajasaham pritam bhuta ganam chanye jayante tamasa janaham. Translation. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. Purport. In this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead describes different kinds of worshippers according to their external activities. According to scriptural injunction, only the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipable. But those who are not very conversant with or faithful to the scriptural injunctions worship different objects according to their specific situation in the modes of material nature. Those who are situated in goodness generally worship the demigods. The demigods include Brahma, Shiva, and others such as Indra, Chandra, and the sun god. There are various demigods. Those in goodness worship a particular demigod for a particular purpose. Similarly, those who are in the mode of passion worship the demons. We recall that during the Second World War, a man in Calcutta worshipped... What? Yes, well, not... worshipped Hitler. Because thanks to that war, he had amassed a large amount of wealth by dealing in the black market. Similarly, those in the motives of passion and ignorance generally select a powerful man to be God. They think that anyone can be worshipped as God and that the same results will be obtained. Now, it is clearly described here that those who are in the mode of passion worship and create such gods, and those who are in the mode of ignorance, in darkness, worship dead spirits. Sometimes people worship at the tomb of some dead man. Sexual service is also considered to be in the mode of darkness. Similarly, in remote villages in India, the worshipper of ghosts. We have seen that in India, the lower class people sometimes go to the forest, and if they have knowledge that a ghost lives in a tree, they worship that tree and offer sacrifices. These different kinds of worship are not actually God worship. God worship is for persons who are transcendentally situated in pure goodness. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Sattvam visuddham vasudeva sabditam. When a man is situated in pure goodness, he worships Vasudeva. The purport is that those who are completely purified of the material modes of nature and are transcendentally situated can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonalists are supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness, and they worship five kinds of demigods. They worship the impersonal Vishnu form in the material world, which is known as philosophized Vishnu. Vishnu is the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the impersonalists, because they do not ultimately believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, imagine that the Vishnu form is just another aspect of the impersonal Brahman. Similarly, they imagine that Lord Brahma is the impersonal form in the material mode of passion. Thus, they sometimes describe five kinds of gods that are worshipable. But because they think that the actual truth is impersonal Brahman, They dispose of all worshipable objects at the ultimate end. In conclusion, the different qualities of the material modes of nature can be purified through association with persons who are of transcendental nature. So the verse was, Yajante sattvika devam yaksha raksham sig rajasaha pretan bhuta ganam chandye yajante tamasa janaha. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. Well, the human being is by nature inclined to worship. So either they worship the Supreme Lord or they worship, well, as stated here, demons or powerful men, or they worship ghosts, as stated here, or objects, mountains, whatever, like that. Forefathers, many kind of different worships are going on, but worship is going on. And even in our modern society, worship is going on. They worship film stars, football players, whatever, you know, actresses. So that is, you know, they put up big pictures in the rooms. So that's worship. And they honor them. They look up to them and, wow, what a man, what a woman. Because they don't think it in terms of God worship. But they hold them for special, okay. So we say they're worshiping them. So worship is gonna go on. You will not stop that. Or in the socialist time here, I don't know who you worshiped here. Was it Tito or something like that? You worshiped Tito, and in Soviet Union was Stalin or Lenin or whatever. I don't know, in Sweden we worship maybe the king to a certain degree. So in that way, it's like inherent in the human being. It seems like it's inherent in human being to want to have someone to look up to. You could say like that. So in our Hare Krishna movement, we have Krishna. We're looking up to Krishna and his representatives, Srila Prabhupada, and I suppose the spiritual masters like that. It's like someone to look up to, then the human being feels kind of satisfied. There's someone to look up to. Because they once said there's some kind of ideal to look up to, the ideal man, or someone who represents the ideal. Now, of course, we may ask those who worship the demons. Well, Prabhupada gave the example of this Indian businessman, not necessarily gentleman, but a businessman who worshipped Hitler because he made profit from the war on the black market. That's a businessman. If they really make money, most probably it's because they deal in the black market. So in any case, he worshipped Hitler. And then you have the ghosts. Of course, ghosts. Prabhupada mentioned here some in India they go to the forest or whatever, some tree they believe there is some ghost, so maybe there is actually a ghost and they worship the tree or the ghost in the tree and they get some benefit from that. And I heard that is very prominent in South America. I think Brazil is very prominent. I was told that they're doing it very much there. And they say, everything goes better with a ghost. So everyone have their own ghost, more or less, you know. And they form small society around worship of a specific ghost. There was one group worshiping one ghost called Atis Amar. That was Rama Sita, backwards. And as far as that ghost, he claimed, well, it's like departed. You know, it's their ghosts. But it was a Brahmin in India previous life. They became a ghost. So then now call him Atis Amar, something like that. And they were quite favorable to the devotees. But still, there was ghost worship. So that's going on in South America, as far as I know. You can find all kind of things like that going on. Maybe we think of Africa that way also, who knows. But as far as I know, it goes on here also, in one way or another. And then we could have a modern crazy culture, pop culture, and various kind of pop band or whatever it is that looks quite crazy, in my opinion. The little bit I've seen will maybe in one sense invoke demonic principles through the music or through their symbols. That is also like the symbols, and they mean different things, and they may actually have certain power as well, just like we in our movement have our symbols or yantras. You know, the star. And the Jewish have this star, but actually they're not exclusive. That's in the Vedic tradition also. The two triangles up, whatever. And of course in various versions of it. So we understand that, now there is actually a power in the symbol, okay? So that makes it more scary. In one sense, scary and scary, but in the modern society, when they sort of use symbols in a thoughtless way, what can be negative symbols in a thoughtless way? So that will have an effect. So in one sense, we may say, yes, it has an effect. People go quite crazy nowadays. I don't know how it is in here, but, and I believe here also people go crazy. And in Sweden they go crazy. And people are not very happy because they're not worshipping the Supreme. They're worshipping ghosts, human beings, whatever, things like that. They worship the computer. That's another worship. You get sucked into imaginary world. And there, you live there. And then you just come out of it a little bit for the moment to eat a little bit and maybe take a little bit rest. And then you go back into that, let's say, virtual reality. Virtual reality means it's not reality. it's an imaginary world. Of course, in one sense, it became very powerful. So in that sense, the human beings, the human society today is taken over. By demonic influences. And we can say the demonic influences have become more materialistic, meaning it's just sense gratification that's really the goal of life. And we know that sense gratification may gratify the senses, but it does not fulfill the soul. It does not satisfy the deeper cravings of the soul, of the heart. It leaves us empty. So that means that we will look for more and more, but it will never be satisfied. So people are not satisfied nowadays. Of course, now it looks good here in Zagreb, you know, shopping centers and highways built, you know, wow. We're making progress. And I said that, yes, we make big highways so we can drive quick to hell. It's highways to hell. Actually, that's a reality. Drive over quick cars. Quickly. Really super quick. But actually, it's all going to hell in one sense. Maybe even figuratively and literally. Because at one point, you know, where's the petrol coming from and, you know, what will
what will happen is that everyone will start, if they haven't started yet, we could say the Iraq war is already a war about the petrol, let's say. And it will be more war about the petrol. So we creating hell.
Okay, still we use the car, okay. And still we use the computers for the service of Krishna, only, exclusively, or whatever, sometimes at least. When we're going to Bisek, to the temple, attend the lectures and the programs like that, we use the cars. So the Hare Krishna movement, we are worshipping the Supreme Lord. So we're also worshipping. You're worshipping. Everyone is worshipping someone. So we choose to worship the Supreme Lord in his form of Radha Shyam Sundar or Giri Govardhan, Nrisingadev, what more? Narayan, whatever. Some forms. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we worship we understand that that's what's stated here. Real worship is meant for the Supreme Lord. Now, in the mode of goodness, you will worship the demigods. But then Prabhupada says in the purport, that is not really good. It's not totally good. It's better than worship the ghosts and the demons. But actually, the worship is meant for the Supreme Lord. And the demigods are not the Supreme Lord, but they may be worshipped as representatives of the Supreme Lord. Of course, then you have the impersonalist mentioned in this purport who worship the demigods with the idea that they are manifestations of the Brahman and that ultimately it's all one. So from their point of view, it doesn't really matter what God you worship, because it's just different manifestation of the one supreme Brahman. So we take a little bit different position in that it makes a difference. And when it comes to Krishna, he is not exactly a manifestation of the impersonal Brahman, but according to the Bhagavad Gita, he's a foundation of the impersonal Brahman. Just like, where is that? There's a 14th chapter says something about that. Anyone remembers some words? Good. Well, there is 14:27. Yeah, could be. Sounds like that. Brahmano hi pratishta ham amritasya vyavyasya sha sat satasya sha dharma sha sukasya kantikasya sha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So that constitutional position of ultimate happiness, the foundation for that is Krishna. I am the basis. He is the basis for that. So, that's the Bhagavad Gita. We also give the example with the sun and the sunshine. So with sunshine, we see the sunshine and then we recognize the sun planet or sun globe. You may not want to call it a planet, and that's okay. We call it the sun globe. It's a little bit like that. Brahman realization is like recognizing the sunshine or the impersonal Brahman, the all-pervasive energy of the Lord, spiritual energy, that we all are part of, and the sunshine. In one sense, we are made up of sunshine, we could say. We're eating vegetables that grow because there's sunshine, okay? So you can one say, saying that we are made from sunshine, these bodies. There's all the energy of the sun and the sunshine from a material point of view, just that. And then spiritually, the spiritual being, the conscious being that gives life to the body is a part of the supreme
personality of Godhead, and he is also Brahman, he is also spirit. So then there is a, there's one realization, then there's a Paramatma, that's compared with recognizing that it's a sun globe from which the sunshine comes. So the Paramatma, Vishnu, is in the heart, is a localized aspect, localized, in one sense localized, is like, has a place in our heart. If nothing, if no one else, he's there. Even in the hearts of the demons, even in the hearts of the ghosts, I assume, must be like that. They have some kind of heart. And there is this Paramatma also, by their side. Okay, that is localized, quite interesting. One interesting concept of the localized. Because it means he's locally situated. So in one sense, he's maybe a little bit closer by to us. You know, because he's the local shop nearby. You don't have to drive all the way into town, you know, just. But it's usually the local shop is maybe not so big. So you may. So in that way, Krishna is, we may think that Krishna is a little bit further away. In the Goloka Dham, in the spiritual world, playing on his flute, dancing with the gopis and herding the cows. So he is a little bit further away. But Paramatma is close with us here, and he is localized, he's present locally here with us. Okay, and then we have this point about the sun globe, and that if we are advanced yogis, but we are not, but there is stories about them. So then you can enter the sun globe, we say the globe. Of course you say you will burn up. No, not the yogis. They will not burn up. They can enter. And if you enter the sun globe, then you can also, if you're qualified enough, meet with the sun god, the predominating deity of the sun planet, of the sun globe. And then it's more, then you can say you know the sun and its different dimension in full, when you also know the sun god. So the absolute truth. So first is Brahman, then is the Paramatma, then finally Bhagavan, Krishna, who is in the spiritual world. So that our objective is to worship and come to know that Supreme Lord who is situated in the spiritual abode, in his spiritual abode beyond the material manifestation. It's beyond its duality, beyond birth and death. So that is, we can say that's a transcendental worship. Because we can worship the demigods as representatives of the Lord, but it still is a representation within the frame of material existence. And then we worship the Supreme Lord as being the transcendent personality beyond. He in one sense has nothing to do with this material world. At the same time, it takes the interest that we chant Hare Krishna, whatever, that we come back. Krishna also says that he comes whenever and wherever there's a required. One is required in order to impart spiritual knowledge and re-establish Dharma. But at the same time, he is situating beyond. Paramatma is like with us here. He's kind of connecting us in one sense. So that is our worship. That's we say the Hare Krishna movement is a transcendental movement, because our objective is to worship the Supreme Transcendent Lord. Transcendent meaning is beyond this material existence. And that brings us beyond this material existence. I don't know how far we have come, but we're going in that direction. Now, it doesn't mean that we necessarily leave everything behind. Our philosophy, because then we can say the impersonal is just go into the impersonal meditation and leave everything behind. But our idea is then that even though the Supreme Lord is transcendent, he's not of this world and like that, still everything belongs to him and is meant to be used in his service. So we may not be able to take that step and just leave everything behind. Practically speaking, we are not able to do that yet, at least. On one hand, practically speaking, one at one moment we have a good chance to do it. And that's at the time of death. Because then it will all, even the body will be taken away. I don't know the mind. The mind is still with us. Believe it or not. Quite scary. Mind thoughts, whatever. All the nonsense thoughts. Fears and anxieties. Okay. But it's a good opportunity to leave everything behind and then to enter into the transcendent existence. Of course, we understand that the pure devotees, the advanced devotees, they in one sense, they're already there. They just still maintain a shadow body. We could say a shadow body here, like a shadow, or it's like a something for a while. At one point, we leave that behind. And we go back to Godhead. Or we go somewhere where Krishna wants us to go. And that is also the pure devotees, they don't really care to go to the spiritual world. Because in one sense, they're already there. So if you're already there, you don't really worry about going there. And we had a little bit of an allegory, or picture in Ljubljana was about the temple. I think I said it was it's like a bridge. The temple is like a bridge. It's an opening into the spiritual world. So we look at this bridge, and then there's a river. And that river can mean many things, depending on how we take it. But then one thing is the river of birth and death. There's a, flowing river, and, the sharks and whatever can eat you up. But the river, but the temple is like a bridge that on which you can pass over to the other side of the river of birth and death. Of course, you always have the ocean of birth and death, and then we have the analog ocean, or material ocean, and there's a boat on which you can travel over the ocean and reach the other side. But that boat, how's it said? That's the Vedic literature. Now, the Vedic literature is a favorable breeze of information. The boat is actually the lotus feet of the Lord. You approach the lotus feet of the Lord, it's like a boat, and on this boat you can cross over the ocean. But as you approach the boat, the lotus feet of the Lord, the ocean just becomes a small puddle of water, like in the calf is walking and makes small imprints, and there maybe collects some water, so you hardly notice it. So you just step over into the spiritual world by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So for me, the temple is like a bridge on which we can cross the river of repeated birth and death. How's it? Vaitaranya River. That's the river that separates the material world and the spiritual world. So this is a bridge place. We speak about this bridge preaching, isn't that? A bridge, trying to make a bridge. It's all bridge preaching. It's all a matter of preaching to make a bridge so that people can enter into the spiritual world. So we say this the temple is actually the bridge. So when you're in bridge, you're almost there. Okay, you have to walk a little bit more, okay, get to the other side. But in one sense, the temple is already the spiritual world. Prabhupada said that. Because here is the deities, the Lord is present in the deity form, in the sound vibration of the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the holy name. And there is the teachers, the guru, the founder of Charya. And there is the devotional service, there's activities in serving the Supreme Lord. So in one sense, you're almost already there. You're on the bridge, on the right bridge. Hopefully going in the right direction also. But it's sometimes one has to watch out on the bridge. Because some maybe think it's quite nice on the bridge. Let's look at the river. Oh, that's big fish is going there. But the problem is that others also want to go on the bridge. And it may get a little bit jammed. because that's not our problem. So now we have a wider bridge here, so more people can go on the bridge at the same time, comfortably. But the allegory here is that when on a bridge, the idea is that we move on, okay? We shouldn't get stuck. Because if we get stuck, then like next can't get on the bridge. They have to wait in the material world on the wrong side. So in one sense, we should move on the bridge, the spiritual bridge. And that's when we're moving on, then we can have a vacuum, and that kind of sucks in the rest coming in here. There's also another example was with the river. Because the river is, well, it's the bridge is one thing, then you have the river, or the river is flowing, okay. If the river is not flowing, it's not a river. Okay. Then it's a lake, or a pond, or a marsh, or it's a marsh, you say marsh, you know, something like water standing still, and swamp, yes, it's a swamp. So in one sense, our devotional life also may be like a river. In one sense, we could say it's a matter of keeping with the stream and floating on. If the water stops flowing, then it's, you know, it's something. The water coming behind, it becomes, you know, something strange. So we should keep going. Keep moving. One way or another. But of course, when we're standing on the bridge and watching the river floating by, because that's another allegory. I'm coming here now and then. Occasionally it happens that I show up for short or longer time. But I mean, sometimes in the 90s, by Vrishabha's mercy, I came here. Okay, he insisted I should come here and preach. So then it was somewhere here, Bisek also. Of course, so the temple is there, so that we could say the bridge is there. But it's not necessarily the same people on the bridge. We can say they've moved on. Or we can say it's the water is floating. So, you have the same temple, the same activities, the same worship going on. But the devotees are, well, some old devotees are around still, coming back a little bit. But it's like it's a continuous flow. And we may say, oh, bad. But it's not bad. It's good. Because if we wanted to just freeze it here, you know, okay, now everyone in this room just stay here forever. But then there's no dynamic. Because the river is meant to flow. And let's see next year. Well, let's see it 10 years or 5 years from now. I come back here. Most probably I would come back. I would say, okay, who do I recognize? Well, that's interesting, you know. Oh, yeah, is that someone? You know, oh, very old devotee. But then new faces and some old faces and like that. Anyway, where did they go? Well, somewhere, you know, gone. But that might not be bad. We think, oh, bad. No, it's not bad. It might be good. They should move on. Of course, back home, back to Godhead, of course. We could say it's not bad, it's just life, okay? And life is like that, that things move on. Just like we have only one small kid, and he isn't so small anymore. Yesterday in Ljubljana one kid was 2 months old. And then so that's the way we're youngest here. No, it was not the youngest, it was another one that was 2 weeks attending the Sunday feast. Because we may ask where those souls came from. So let's say. But the point is what? Yes, they will not stay young forever. That's just life. And then you're going to say, yes, but my child is going to become a pure devotee of the Lord. At least a good devotee of the Lord. Okay. I believe it when I see it. Some 15 years from now. Let's see what they're doing. And that's life.
So now if we open up to the realities of life, we may not need to be so shocked when life hits us in the face. Hey, you're getting old, or you're losing the hair and getting gray hair. At Dhamvik Court, there we have older devotees. And we're young devotees. There's about 10 kids under 3 years. No. If not 12, no. They're coming, popping up new souls joining our community. But then you have the old devotees, like myself and others, who join in the late 70s, early 80s, and coming there, you see, all with gray hairs. Then you know, yes, that's life. Life hits you, you know. Hey, you're getting old. So in that way, we don't need to be shocked when life hits us. It's just life. So we can also, in our devotional community, we can just say, well, that's life. New enthusiastic young bhaktins and brahmacharis, bhaktas come and they, yes, you know, we're gonna do it, you know. And then, you know, they go and gradually they become more mature and married and whatever, family life, and kind of this disappear out somewhere. That's just life. You don't have to be shocked. But if we are blind to life, we lose the point. We lose the people. The water is passing under the bridge, and it's just like kind of running away. It's just floating away somewhere. We don't know where. And that's quite foolish. Maybe we should get into a boat and follow with in the flow and see, hey, where is it leading? And then possibly make more bridges or whatever, guest house by the river, so that the water is not left alone. So that kind of a picture, you know. It happens. And then if it happens that way, then is the continuation. What is the continuation? What happens on the other side of the bridge? Or they're just getting back. Maybe we think the bridge leads into the spiritual world. We end up in somewhere, some other world. So we may have to be open for the realities of life, our devotional life also. And then there is a possibility that we can do something constructive of it. So that not just water passes, you know, keeping the tap open and it's running, you know, running and running out in the sewage system. You know, we want to take it and preserve it. Or preserve, not preserve, keep it, but that is a part of the system and goes on. And if we do that, then we may actually make more new bhaktas and bhaktins joining in, because it's far out, you know, there's a future here. Not just on the bridge, but after the bridge and whatever. Or when we passed under the bridge, you know, something going on. Because that's a reality. And that's a challenge. It's not really a challenge. It's just reality. And in one sense, we may have to be bold enough to face reality. Then we can make something good of it. I'm sure we can come, we can say, I said in Ljubljana, you know, let's meet again, year 2016, you know. There it was the 7th of May, now here it's the 8th of May, 2016, you know. See how things are going, where we are, who is still here, Matadi. I'm happy to see you today. Old generation, you know, we may or may not see in 10 years. So in that way, life goes on, okay. But we are worshipping the Supreme Lord, and that's the interesting thing, that new people come and old people leave. leave. Leave to live their life. Something with Krishna. Now, but the chanting of the holy name is, we meet year 2016, okay, on the 8th of May.
And that's going to be chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. For what? It's not going to change. That's not going to change. Don't worry. It's going to stay the same. Very good. So that is going to be the same. The deities is going to be worshipped. There's going to be, Gonita is going to stand there. Or somewhere. Or maybe other deities. Or maybe not. And they're going to be worshipped basically the same way as now. And Srila Prabhupada is going to sit there somewhere. And he's going to be worshipped. And there's going to be some speaker sitting here. Not necessarily me. Some other guru, swami, bhakta, whatever, preacher. It has been like that since time immemorial. Okay, they didn't worship Gaudiya 1,000 years ago. They started only 500 years ago. Quite new. But they worshiped the Supreme Lord. And they chanted the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. How many thousands and millions of years has a Hare Krishna mantra been chanted congregationally? We may think it started with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but as far as I understood, he put an emphasis on it, but it was already there. It's there in the Upanishads, the Hare Krishna mantra, or at least the chanting of bhajans and kirtan. Even Narada Muni, you know, I mean, he blew it in his previous lifetime. And that was good, because otherwise we wouldn't have had Narada Muni. But I mean, he was up in the heavens. And he was a playboy. He was, because he had all his girlfriends with him, and he was maybe playing a Vienna guitar or something. But he came to the Samkirtan festival. I'm sorry, but I'm making fun. But he came to the Samkirtan festival, but he didn't catch the point that he was going to glorify Krishna. So he chanted songs glorifying others. Here we have whatever, great man, demigods, or something like that. And the the managers of the festival came, said, what's this nonsense going on here? That's not what we wanted. It's in the Bhagavatam. You become a sudra. And he took birth. From a Sudrani, a servant woman. His father is not mentioned there. But he became the great Narada Muni. So, even the heavenly planets, they're chanting the holy name, coming together to glorify the Lord. So this is a timeless process. Don't worry, it will not change. But there is those who chant or participate, that is a continuous flow of new jivas coming in and ecstatically joining the Harinam Samkirtan. And after a while they chant in a different way, but the trick for us might be to still create some facility or whatever, space or recognition that they still can stay connected. We stay connected with the river as it flows by, you know. Yeah, I'd say, you know, the Ganges is very nice up there in Himalayas. Very fresh and clean and, you know, wonderful, you know. And as she floats down, you come to this Devaprayag, before Devaprayag, Bhagirathi and Alakanandi rivers. At Devaprayag, you start to call it Ganges. And then it floats down the plain land. It becomes a little bit broader and slower, and you know, it still is quite powerful, you know, but it's not the same youthful vigor as up there in the Himalayas. And then finally it floats down into the, whatever, Indian Ocean. Of course, we don't propose that some impersonal merging here, but in any case it reaches its so to say end. And the end is very broad and, you know, stable, big, floating steadily by. So So that's how a river flows. So one thing we can say, and we start off enthusiastic, you know, yes, you know, great, youthful, fresh, clean. And then we become like slower and more mature, maybe, hopefully. But still, the movement is going on, okay? So we keep going, no problem. You can't stop it, okay? Don't worry, it will not stop. It will go on. And we just may have to float with it so that new generations can come in. Greater space in a different sense, because it's a space in terms of just a temple room, but there may be also a different space for the devotees to be and interact and worship the Lord together, or just support each other so that they can worship the Lord or whatever, live their lives. So there's a space and place. And you will find that, you know, I don't know how many of you are here now. How many are you here? In the temple room? How many is in the temple, in the ashram? About? 15 or 50? 15, 5, okay. 16, okay. Wow. Very good, very good. 16, okay, you know, then you have a congregational member. How many are they? About? Well, let's say 160. We say 160, okay. This is what I used to say in Sweden also. Well, some 30, 40 living in the temple, some 150, 200. Something like that. Now, you know, that's not very much. You know, and even this 200 or whatever you have outside there, you know, you're loosely connected. But 10 years from now, you know, if we keep the contact with the stream, with the flow, you know, we may have thousands and thousands. It may take a different dimension, the movement, as we connect with the flow, with the energy that is going on. It's not meant to remain small. It's meant to become big. Don't ask me how. Well, I can think some way, but the interesting thing that when I was young Bhakta, 1970 in Germany, I mean, Satchinanda Swami had not even come to the temple then. Okay? Maybe it was around somewhere, outskirts. But Bhakti Vaibhava Swami, he was there, okay. I came 2 weeks before him. Okay. You know, okay. So what happened was that they said that this movement was going to spread all over the world. And I thought, how is that going to happen? Because the temple was a little bit like the temple in Ljubljana. If you take the house in which the temple is and you take the top floor, that was a temple, that was ashram, everything. And in front, and then underneath that there was a storage going on, and then there was something else in front. And then there was a railroad just nearby, back behind it. So that was an... Then when you had to be careful when you open the windows in the temple room, because it might fall out. So standing there, I thought, this is going to spread all over the world. It didn't make any sense to me. Okay, I couldn't figure out. But I figured out that it was something that was going. If I just chanted Hare Krishna, it was going to bring about liberation for my own soul and maybe my family, and that I was satisfied with. But it was very hard to see because it was so spaced out. Not really so spaced out, but it was so fragile in one sense. And the amazing thing, it did spread all over the world, basically, practically speaking, in an amazing way. you know. I couldn't imagine how it would happen. Well, I can say it didn't happen because of me, that's for sure. But maybe it was a small part of it, so that it's not that any one of us is going to exactly be the one who does it. But now it's Prabhupada was the one who started it. And now we all follow him. And thus we all help it to happen. A little bit small support. And there's one thing is don't stop going. Because there's someone behind you, okay. And you know, you have to move on. And then we could say move on and maybe we are moving into different fields. But that might be necessary in order for the new people to move on, on the bridge. You get over the bridge and you get different fields to go into. Okay, good. Let's keep moving. Let's keep going. And be happy. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Don't worry. Krishna is in control. That was, I heard in Vrindavan now. Well, that we have seen also Prabhupada is around. He is spiritually present with us. We may or may not be able to see him exactly physically like that. But he is spiritually present. And there was one lady, she said, my god sister, I believe it was. She said, in Vrindavan, strange things happen, okay. But if I remember correct, she was in the Samadhi. In the Samadhi, strange things happen. Prabhupada is there in a way. He is there. So we heard that Prabhupada sometimes speaks to the devotees there. So this lady, if it wasn't the Samadhi, somewhere there, but Prabhupada told her that don't worry. And said something like, it's going according to my plan, or I'm in control. It's going according to my plan. So don't worry. So this was 1996, 95 or 96 or whatever. And hearing that, you think, okay, nice. I don't have to worry. Because going according to Krishna's plan or Prabhupada's plan, he has not left us. He is with us. So that way, it is in one way, the difficulty is for us to not get in the way of the plan. So that, you know, see it that way. There's a plan and there's a movement. And make sure that we don't get in the way, that we don't block the development by our ignorance or false ego, pride and prestige and so on. Put that to the side so that the true spirit of devotion can manifest. Okay, some question or comment? I try to answer. Yes, Prabhu. Well, there was devotees in Sweden at that time. I could say that there was devotees in Sweden at that time. But they were not followers of Prabhupada, okay? They were actually a disciple of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. Was in Sweden, okay. So there was devotees. And he wrote actually a book about bhakti and like that. Something small was going on. But it wasn't that dynamic preaching. And I was a young man, or boy, whatever. So I wasn't in contact with him. So I was living in South Sweden. And if you're South Sweden, it's not so far to Germany, okay. So as a young man, I was traveling and I saw the monks in Hamburg, summer 69, and that made me come back summer 70. There wasn't really anything going on in that sense in Sweden, but the time was that I would have met the devotees. Whatever I would have done, I would have met the devotees. 1970 summer, there was a something like Midnight Sun Rock Festival in Sweden, somewhere up towards Stockholm. And I was seeing the poster written in the school. I think, well, maybe I should go there, I thought. But I ended up going down to Germany instead and joining the temple there. But if I would have gone to that midnight summer, whatever, midsummer, whatever, something, the midnight sun, you know, festival, whatever it was, then I would have met the devotees there also, far out. So wherever I would have gone, whatever possibly was in my mind, in either case, I would have met the devotees. Even if I would choose not to go to Germany to see the devotees there, I could very well have gone to that festival. And there I would have met Dhananjaya Prabhu and a couple of Swedish ladies who joined in England. They had their Radha Krishna temple band that was going and performing there. So I would have met, you know, the time was ripe. Okay. Good. Yes.
What was your first book?
The first book I read was, well, when I joined, they had this Macmillan's edition of Bhagavad Gita. And then a nice book was Easy Journey to Other Planets. We had that one also. And then there was this Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure, compilation of free essays by Prabhupada, or whatever lectures by Prabhupada put together. Maybe that was the first one I read. And then Easy Journey to Other Planets and Macmillan's edition of the Bhagavad Gita. And then you had Ishapanishad, and then came Nectar of Devotion quite early, very early. Well, maybe didn't read it so carefully in the first year. And then there was Krishna book showing up also. I didn't join because of the books, okay? Because there was no books. There was no book distribution. When I came to Germany in summer 70, actually someone had a back to... Not the Back to Godhead magazine, it was a Zurück zu Gottheit magazine. Zurück zu Gottheit, and Back to Godhead in German. So there's someone, some hippie showed me, well, maybe it's this, it's his address, you know, Sunday feast, you know, this address, and then I got the address. Okay. Yes, Prabhu. What we should do? We should keep going. Don't stop, okay? You know, we don't necessarily have to go in circles, okay? That doesn't satisfy, you know. I have a principle is that I never want to go back the same way I came. You know, I always have to go like, if I go out, I can't go back the same way. I have to explore. Okay? So, you know, so we maybe come back 2016, but no, we shouldn't just stand still and, you know, what is it? På stället, fram. Some militaries, you know, just marching on the same place. you should march forward, explore the frontiers of Krishna consciousness, of spreading Krishna consciousness or whatever, so that when we come back, you know, keep moving, so that when we come back 2016, we are more experienced and whatever. Gathered experience and territory or whatever, in different ways, okay. But I think keep going, because if you just stand in the same place, you get boring, and well, I can't do that. I have to keep moving in a way or another towards Krishna or with Krishna, whatever, something. Okay. Yes. No, I can't. Because I don't know where I met him. maybe it was already in Sweden, when I opened the newspaper, I was saying, some strange people in London were dancing around the guru and chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think that was when I met Prabhupada, okay. And then I thought, yeah, I know it all. Mantras, yes, guru, yes. I don't know it all. But I think that's the first time I met Prabhupada. Because it's through the vibration, through the message. The in the body, the physical form is, I don't think it has so much meaning for me. But the next big meeting with Prabhupada was when I came into the temple for the Sunday feast. Because then I was giving a good dose of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness as Prabhupada preached and as it was repeated by the senior devotee there, who had been devotee for 1.5 years, I believe. And you should know that, you know. The temple president, he had been 3 years in the movement. That was really big. You know, 3 years he was a temple president, and you know, 1.5 years was quite good already, you know. Keep that in mind. Time is relative. And then I say, yeah, 35 years, 36 years in the movement, yes, something. But another 15, 20 years, well, you know, what? 50 years, yes, okay. Still in one sense, we're on the beginning. So Prabhupada, I would say I met Prabhupada with the sound vibration and through the instructions, through his disciples. And then I met him, so to say, in person also, but then you prepared you. Because then you would just notice the fact that he was speaking the same thing. In person, as was in his books and the philosophy, there was no difference. That was essential. And in a way, we can say he's still preaching. Okay, he's preaching through his books and through his disciples and grand disciples. And that's Krishna, and that you can't stop. Okay, I believe it's time to stop for this moment so that we can keep going, okay, tomorrow. Okay, nice to see you here in the big temple room. You look a little bit, well, actually it looks like you're more devotees here, but it's not so packed, and that's good. So there's place for more to move in, to move on. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.